session, Judge Brappel, Judge Rodenberg, Judge Riley, the Honorable Judge Brappel presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. So, good morning for the second time. Please be seated. So before we begin, I just want to make a few remarks. First of all, for the record, today's date is March 21st, 2019, and this is the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I will ask the marshal to call the first case. We do that to create our record, and you probably know these proceedings are being recorded. After that, I'll make just a few quick comments, and then we'll proceed with the argument. So, Marshal, you can call the first case.
First case.
Right, and I see counsel are seated at counsel table. I'm sure you're both very experienced and been to our court before. I just want to remind you of a couple of things. First of all, the podium is adjustable. That means the microphone as well as the height of the podium. And please take your time. I want you to be comfortable when you do get to the podium. We are looking forward to the conversation today. And you should have whatever papers you need, your glass of water. You look like you're already ready to roll. So, and then if you would, before you start your remarks, again, just to keep our oral recording very clear, if you would please let us know your name. We know it, but if you'd say it again for the record, as well as the client you represent, I would appreciate that. So, counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
I aspire to be taller, I think, when I put this up there. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Paul Sarratori, S-A-R-R-A-T-O-R-I. And I represent the appellant, who is the defendant in the lower court action, Stephen Anderson. Before I get started, I have to fall on my sword a little bit. I made a mistake in my brief with regards to the standard of review. I would opine that it is a de novo standard. The facts are undisputed. We are arguing that Judge Johnson in the lower court misapplied the law with regards to the enhanceability of the unreviewed license revocation that was pending review at the time Mr. Anderson picked up his subsequent DUI. So at first blush, I was reviewing yesterday and I looked and I realized that I put the wrong standard in there. So to begin, you know, the argument obviously is rooted in the Wilkin case, which is the precedent that was set out by the Supreme Court some years ago, which said that the state cannot use an unreviewed license revocation in order to enhance a subsequent DWI. Clearly an argument based upon due process so that there was no deprivation of rights as it relates to using something that had not been litigated to enhance and to make more serious a subsequent DWI, which has liberty interests associated with it. Clearly an enhanced DWI carries with it mandatory minimum jail sentences, enhancement up to a felony if it happens to be the fourth one in a 10-year period.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, you are clearly asserting the liberty interest in this case.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
And it also has to it the property interest issues, especially in this case, which is one of the reasons why I think the state waited, is because the enhanceability up to the second degree allowed the state to take Mr. Anderson's vehicle.
Then what do we do with footnote 7 in that case?
Right. Well, correct. And footnote 7 is pretty much the issue here. It was dicta, which we obviously know is not precedential, but it is an opinion given out for guidance purposes. And the state followed that guidance when they waited to charge in this matter.
Well, our courts followed the guidance too, right, in the Hino decision? And now that's a civil forfeiture case. Yours is not a civil forfeiture case.
Correct, and that's the difference. I mean, and I understand we're up against it in that situation, the defense is, because, yes, this court in Hino said, hey, it got reviewed, then you can use it. And then they used it in the forfeiture matter, but that was a property interest issue versus a liberty interest. We're talking about freedom here. We're talking about a possible prison sentence if we're talking about a felony. So I think there's a little bit more at stake when we're talking about a criminal matter versus the property.
So help me out, counsel. Work me through the due process analysis. So you've already talked about the first element, you know, recognizing that there is a personal liberty interest at stake in your case. Keep keep going through the Matthews test for me.
Right, the Matthews test, right. And I think that was laid out very properly, actually, and Hino actually laid it out very well.
Well,
in there.
You know, Wilkin.
And Wilkin did too,
yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, I think the biggest concern is that, how do I put this? The biggest concern for the Wilkin court was just that, is you're going to move forward on a criminal matter where liberty interests are at odds, and you're not going to have the proper review of what's used to aggravate and to make more serious the offense that is proper or presently before the court. And I think that was one of the biggest concerns that the Wilkin court had when it put out its decision.
Right. I guess what I'm struggling with is it seems to me that this case is quite different from Wilkin because we do have a judicially reviewed license revocation as of the time the state filed the complaint. So that, you know, it seems to me to be significant. It's not just that it says so in footnote 7, but we also have a big distinction.
Correct. So. And I think what we're asking, or what I'm asking here today, is that we kind of have a bright line rule here of what we're going to do is that we're going to treat it at the time of the offense when that aggravating factor is not ripe. At the time of the offense, in this case, when there is an unreviewed license revocation, so basically as in here, Mr. Anderson picks up a DUI, he files a petition for review of the aggravating of the license revocation, which under 169A03 is considered a qualified impaired prior driving incident. But as soon as he files that petition, that becomes an unreviewed revocation. Wilkins says an unreviewed revocation cannot be used. The question then becomes, is it at the time of the offense or is it at the time of charging? Now, Wilkin dealt with it at the probable cause stage because in Wilkin, the prosecutor didn't wait. They charged it out right away. They charged it out right away, and at the probable cause stage under Rule 11, they could not use at trial the unreviewed revocation. The position that we're arguing, which my brief, I apologize, was not very good at laying out, is that if you look at the statutes when it relates to a qualified impaired, if you look at 169A03, qualified prior impaired driving incident, it talks about either A, a conviction, or B, a revocation. A conviction can't be used until it's actually a conviction, okay? It's gone through its processes. And we look at the time of the offense to say, was there a conviction? We also look at the time of the offense to see if there was a revocation. And Wilkin said, well, wait, you got to make it one step further. You got to look and see if that revocation has been reviewed yet. Okay? Our argument is that if you look at other areas of the law that are enhanced by prior actions, such as domestic assaults, you look at the time of the offense. At the time of the offense in a domestic assault, you cannot charge the enhanced charge to a gross misdemeanor or felony unless the person has the prerequisite prior conviction.
Right, but there's no corollary implied consent revocation in that situation.
You are correct. There is no other civil issue.
Implied consent revocation notice is right at the time, right? There's no question that he had the notice of the revocation before the second offense here.
Oh, he had the notice, correct.
So the only piece that was missing under Wilkin was his opportunity to have challenged the revocation to see if he could get it rescinded.
You're right. You are correct. Correct. That's what Wilkin did. Wilkin was a Hennepin County case where they stayed the case until such time as
right.
It was over.
So not to beat it to death, though, that's those domestic assault cases and other criminal cases aren't really the same as this one.
They're not the same. You're right. There's no civil or there's no revocation component. I will grant you that. The way we looked at the cases and I grant it, our mountain is high to climb here based upon the prior analysis. Okay. I mean, you look at Hino and say, okay, well, at Hino we said, hey, we waited. It was then withdrawn, their challenge, and then we used that to take away the vehicle and use it as a prior revocation. But the argument, again, we go back to the liberty interest, and we go back to the what we could only say was the legislative intent. When we look at the DWI statutes, okay, if you look at the DWI statutes, we have the conviction, which we've granted is just like the domestic assault cases, but we also have, in that same line, a qualified impaired driving incident, meaning a license revocation. And then we take that step further to the analysis of Wilkin, and it has to be reviewed. The question being is it at the time of probable cause or is it at the time of the offense?
I have a question for you. It's really a point of curiosity.
Yes.
Because your client was charged with two crimes,
mm-hmm.
and it would appear that in your briefing that you suggest that the test refusal from December 16th arrest could be an aggravating factor for the third degree.
It is, Your Honor. So
you're just arguing with regard to the count that's in front
right,
of us.
Right, because the only way it gets to a second degree is with the second aggravating factor.
Right.
So you have the refusal, which is number one. The second one is the revocation, because at that point there was no conviction.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And whether that counts or not.
Right, and that's at issue here. Is it at the time of the offense or is it at the time of charging? Now, Wilkin, granted, did an analysis under Rule 11 and based it at the time of the probable cause hearing. Now, in this case, at the time of the probable cause hearing, yes, that license revocation had been reviewed. That's undisputed. I can't sit here and say that because I was the attorney on both cases. I know full well that both were, that the first case, the state waited pursuant to the footnote, followed that to the T, waited until the revocation was ripe in their minds, and that the revocation was actually ripe, and it was reviewed, and they used it. Our position is that it's at the time of the offense, based upon the statute, and based upon the other enhanceable factors, or the other cases that use enhanceability.
So if we were to agree with you and publish on this case, what would your syllabus point be?
My syllabus would point at the time of the offense, at the time of the offense, an unreviewed license revocation cannot be used to enhance a subsequent DUI.
And can you explain for me, and maybe I'm just being a little thick here, but it seems to me that Wilkin, the Supreme Court's opinion in Wilkin, went to some lengths to explain why additional process was required in that case. And the footnote 7 kind of grew out of that, I think, to say, and what, you know, we're rejecting the process that was used here.
Right.
We're now going to say this is the alternative, which the state has already said that they followed. And I understand your argument against the footnote.
Right.
But what is the additional process that you're looking for here? Because it sounds to me like you're saying defective complaint as opposed to additional process.
Well,
I'm just trying to make sure I understand the issues you're presenting us with.
No, yeah. I understand, yeah. Your Honor, and I appreciate that. I guess I'm trying to put this in the best possible way. My argument with regards to why this revocation should not be used in this case has to deal with at the time of the offense. Okay? I think that's where
you're arguing that no amount of process can ever render the prior revocation on which there was not a hearing before the second offense an aggravating factor.
That's better. Thank you. That's probably the best way to put it.
That would be a second syllabus point.
Yeah.
Yes,
but if we do that syllabus point, it seems like we have to do a third one, which is to tell the Supreme Court why we ignored footnote 7 of Wilkin.
Well, I think with regards to footnote 7, why we ignore it, I mean, first of all, it's not precedential.
Well, you're right. We probably wouldn't be ignoring it. We'd be contravening it.
Well, I think we would be explaining it.
And how would we explain that in a situation?
We would say that in looking at a case and comparing it to other enhanceable such cases and looking at the statutes looking at the DWI statutes per se, and let me see if I can get through this and make it sound, not just like I'm filibustering here, I want to make it sound very clear, is I think if we put a bright line rule out there that says, or you put a bright line rule out there that says, okay, at the time of the offense, any license revocation that is being used to enhance needs to be reviewed. And the reason why we are doing this is because if you look at the statute, number one, the DWI statutes, and what can be used as an aggravating factor, number one, we use a conviction. Now, a conviction clearly has gone through its complete process at the time of the offense if it's going to be used. The same argument should hold true for the revocation, which is being used to affect somebody's liberty interest, such as we do with regards to other enhanceable offenses. I don't know if that explained it properly, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, we're looking at ripening. I mean, if we look at any case under the law, is it ripe to be used at that point? At the time of the offense, is that revocation ripe? And if you're talking about Wilkin, they're saying no.
It's been revoked, though, right?
But it hasn't been reviewed.
Right.
And Wilkin says it's not, you can't use it yet because it hasn't been reviewed.
Right, but he doesn't have a conviction, no. But he does have a revocation.
But it's unreviewed.
Subject to being being reviewed by
which the is court. The due process argument.
Right.
Is that saying we're not going to use something that hasn't been reviewed yet. So the question is if you wait, if you're not looking at the time of the offense, are you going to allow just us to wait? And now obviously in this case, and now with the new issues with forfeitures, that becomes a whole new issue that we're not talking about here, but that becomes a whole new issue with the Olson case and such, so on and so forth about waiting. So to have a bright line rule at the time of the offense, to me, would say, okay, at the time of the offense, you have to either have a reviewed license revocation or a conviction per the statute. And I see my time is ending. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. So counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Catherine Crane, and I am the assistant city attorney for the city of Lexington. I represent the state of Minnesota, the respondent. I just want to pick up where appellant has left off with regards to the argument about the bright line rule and why the offense date should be the date that we look at. And one issue that appellant doesn't discuss is Minnesota Statute 169A53 subdivision 2C. And in that statute, that is the petition for judicial review under the implied consent law. And it specifically says that filing of the petition does not stay, rescind, or disqualify the revocation. So I think the statutory language is very clear that even in a situation where you have a defendant who has filed a petition for review, that revocation is still there. As Judge Rodenberg pointed out, the defendant was revoked, and at all times throughout
the time of the second offense.
Correct. And at all times throughout from the first DWI to the second DWI all the way up to the waiver, at all times was he revoked. At no time was there a stay of his revocation, unlike in Wilkin. And so I think it's really important that we consider the fact that the statute already tells us that the revocation is there, it's in effect. And my analogy of counsel's argument that this unreviewed license revocation could not be used is like a Monopoly get out of free jail card, because you're saying, wait, I've applied for petition for judicial review, so you can't use it against me. So, and that's not what the Supreme Court says in Wilkin, specifically in footnote 7. It's a roadmap that the Supreme Court has given to say to the prosecution, look, this is what you could have done. You could have waited. You could have waited for that judicial review to be completed and then used that revocation that would have been sustained. In our case, we don't even get to that issue because there was a waiver. So we don't even have a judicial review because there's a waiver. So there was at no point from October 2nd when appellant's driver's license was revoked to April 26th when the judicial review was to take place, at no time was there a change in circumstances. His revocation was always there. So the state properly followed what the Supreme Court said to do to ensure that we did not violate a defendant's due process rights by using, as the state did in Wilkin, the unreviewed license revocation.
So when you say you follow Wilkin, you're talking about footnote 7, right?
I correct.
Mean, that's your brief, I think, is pretty clear on that. So is footnote 7 relevant to determining probable cause, or is it only an analysis of the process that's due? Which I think is the issue. You know, we've been presented with a due process issue, but I just want to understand your view of that.
I do think that there is an analysis to the probable cause because what happened in Wilkin was that after the second DWI and it was charged out immediately, I think defense counsel in that case very smartly requested a speedy trial. That incident occurred in September, and there was a trial that was scheduled in November. And on the date of trial in Wilkin, the license, her license revocation had not been reviewed. So the Supreme Court in Wilkin says that the probable cause at the time of the probable cause in the charging document wasn't there. You didn't have the implied consent revocation that had been upheld in order to use that to enhance that second DWI.
And then the other question I'd like you to explore for us, if you would, is similar to the question I asked of appellant's counsel, so having to do with the Matthews analysis. So I think you would like us to rely not just on Wilkin, but on the Hino case that this court has already given some deference to, if at a minimum, but actually tracked footnote 7 in the Wilkin case, in the Hino case. So obviously the two cases are different. How would you have us go through the due process analysis under Matthews?
Well, and the due process analysis under Matthews, a private interest that's affected by the official action, and that private interest is the license revocation. And our statute already lays out that there is a process for that.
I think appellate's counsel, though, is focused on the liberty interest primarily, unless I'm missing something. But Hino was definitely a property interest.
Correct.
But this case would be the liberty. And that's what I'm wondering is, how do you translate Hino over to this case?
In Hino, the court found that the due process was not violated when the prior revocation was used as an aggravating factor to subject the vehicle to forfeiture when the revocation was once subject of that judicial review, but then because of the withdrawal, it made the issue moot, and they were the prosecution in that case was able to move forward and use that prior revocation to enhance for that forfeiture issue.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think I'm understanding what you're saying, that in Hino, the appellant had withdrawn their petition. In this case, we have the appellant appearing at the implied consent hearing. And if I have this wrong, you know, please correct me. And then waiving.
Correct.
Right? So that you're saying that those two processes are analogous.
Right? Absolutely. I think that the waiver is the effect of a withdrawal. If you're waiving your right to that judicial review on that date, you're withdrawing your petition. And it's my understanding that you don't get to make a motion to renew that petition unless there's some specific change very close in time, be it a law or some rule that has changed that allows you to maybe bring that back. A- And as to your question regarding due process and the Matthews, as Judge Rodenberg pointed out, the appellant in this case, he had notice, he had the opportunity for that judicial review, and there was a complete adjudication when the waiver was put on the record. Had the appellant gone forward with judicial review and been successful and the revocation rescinded, then the state admits that we wouldn't have had an aggravating factor in which to enhance that DWI, and at that point we would have charged out the third degree DWI. So using the appellant's implied revocation after the review, had the opportunity for review, did not violate his due process rights, and it was proper under Wilkin. What the Supreme Court set forth as a directive or a roadmap for the state to follow. And I do think that footnote 7 contradicts appellant's argument of the date controlling because of the issue that we've discussed already regarding the probable cause and the state's burden of proof at the time of being challenged on a probable cause hearing. Additionally, the unique factor of Wilkin and with her revocation being stayed, I think that if the petition for review and the staying was an issue, I don't think that we would have seen the Supreme Court's note about waiting to charge, because then that would have gone to appellant's argument that at the time of the second offense, there was this unreviewed license, and in that case, it was actually stayed. And
counsel, the other part of footnote 7, you know, it is that it's not just the state's decision to wait to charge, but also the state's decision to amend a complaint at
Correct.
A later date, which I think dovetails with your point, if I'm following you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Thanks.
So, and as the court is aware, the state does have, you know, under Minnesota Statute 628.26, we do have up to 3 years to charge out an offense. So we have statutory authority to wait, and I think that the note in the Supreme Court in Wilkin is maybe reminding prosecutors that you don't have to charge something at the instant that the offense occurs. So the state truly took to heart what the court said in Wilkin, and the enhancement of the appellant's second DWI was proper in following that directive and delaying charging until judicial review of the aggravating factor had been fully adjudicated or complete, and thereby not violating the defendant's due process rights. So if there are no further questions, thank you. I ask that this court affirm Judge Johnson's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And as I mentioned, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points that I would like to make. Ms. Crane states or brings up the issue with Wilkin that was a stayed procedure based upon the Hennepin County standing order, which I think we're all familiar with, who practiced in Hennepin or were judges or sat in Hennepin. But Wilkin was very clear that the stay or not the stay was not the issue. Okay, I think they were very clear that said even if somebody had sought a stay or didn't, it wasn't going to waive their challenge with regards to an unreviewed license revocation. I quote from here, it says, by including section 1698.53 in its definition of a prior impaired driving-related loss of license, the legislature evidenced an intent to limit the use of a license revocation as an aggravating factor to a situation where judicial review has already occurred or been waived by failure to file a timely decision. So the state's quoting of the fact that it doesn't stay or doesn't is, I think, has no bearing here with regards to the issue at hand. I think what it says is an unreviewed revocation cannot be used no matter what, except, again, what we're trying to decide here is if it's at the time of the offense or at the time of charging. The other point I want to make is that Ms. Crane points out that this is kind of like a get-out-of-jail-free card, and it isn't, okay? Because a judge in the trial court has the discretion to issue jail time, okay? I mean, if we're looking at a liberty interest, obviously, yes, enhanceability makes a mandatory minimum, but it in no way takes away the discretion of the prosecutor and what they offer and in the trial court and what they decide should be a proper sentence given the circumstances of the case. So to say that a person's going to go and pick up 123 DWI just because they have this judicial review pending, I think is a stretch. We're not talking about a serial killer here or a serial rapist is going out to commit these crimes because they have they're mentally ill and they want to just keep killing or something like that. We're talking about DWIs. DWIs are not a serial type crime. It's usually a mistake. It's usually somebody who goes out, drinks too much, and gets on the road. I don't think people are going to file a judicial review so they can go pick up another one and not have any consequences. And for the state to argue that, I think, is a little specious in this case.
I have a question. What's your view? What if the second offense here had occurred on April 27 of 17? That is the day after the appellant waived his right to the implied consent hearing. Would it then be a prior qualified impaired driving incident?
It happened after, yes. Because so at that actually, point it was reviewed.
If we were to have that holding, we have yet another syllabus point. And that is that when that happens, that would extend the look back period beyond 10 years because you'd be going from April 27th and not from December 18th.
Well, if you look at that, Your Honor, if you look at the way the statute's written, it's either or. It's either the conviction or revocation. And so you can use the latter of the two. So, right, it's not really, it's 10 years.
Of course, the conviction, the revocation, according to the state and the district court, the revocation occurred on December 25th.
Correct.
The revocation date, under your argument, would be extended to not the day he was given notice of revocation, as the legislature seemingly seemed to want to count it. Instead, we would say that revocation date is the notice he was given revocation and actually had his hearing or waived it.
Right. I mean, that would be the argument.
Seems like we're adding words to the statute.
If we're looking at the look-back period?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, a qualified impaired, within 10 years of either a conviction or a qualified impaired driving-related loss of license.
Right, which under the statute seems to be the revocation date that's modified by Wilchin because of the due process issues.
Correct. So, I mean, I guess we're not extending. We're saying what is going to qualify as a prior impaired driving-related loss of license? Is it going to be a reviewed or an unreviewed license revocation? Now, generally,
say it's a reviewed one, though. We've changed the date of when the revocation occurred to the April 26th date here.
See, Mike, may I answer this question?
I'm trying to
formulate the note in my head. I mean, to answer this correctly and not. Generally, the law, the argument has been it's the revocation date where you received your notice 7 days from the date you received the notice of revocation
That's the way the implied consent law is set.
Correct. Now, Wilkin didn't change the date. Wilkin just said you can't use the unreviewed license revocation as a basis to enhance. Okay. I think if I'm saying that correctly, Wilkin never changed the date. Wilkin says, if it's unreviewed, you can't use it. It never talked about extending the look back period. I guess we would have to go through and I'd have to dissect the implied consent statute to say, okay, are we going to say because it's at the time of the offense, does that mean we're going to change the the date you received the notice of revocation. I mean, that would be a whole different argument, but I understand what you're saying, and it does open up another
argument. I can imagine the next case in April of 2027 where someone says, you can't extend that date, you should use the earlier date.
That would be another argument, yes, sir. I understand.
Okay.
Thank you. And again, we ask that you reverse the lower court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both, all counsel in this case. Your arguments are much appreciated by the court. This matter is now submitted to us for our decision. We will issue a decision within the statutory time frame. So thank you, counsel.
Thank you.